Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Lore of Us podcast. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to the fungal apocalypse. This is our coverage of The Last of Us on HBO, Season 2, Episode 3, The Path. I'm John.
And I'm David.
And I did your line before, so ruined the whole rhythm.
I thought we had like a natural flow, so we didn't actually script out the intros like we usually do. So
I know.
It's confusing.
It turns out now that we're without Joel, Our whole vibe is off, you know? He was the glue that was keeping this union together.
Basically. And the world has changed, so we have to adapt with it.
Did you see he's not in the intro anymore?
I did not watch the intro. I skipped it.
There were two silhouettes of them in the intro, and they took his away.
Oh, that's right, in the fungal thing at the very end. Mm-hmm. Now it's just, where's Dina? That's not fair to Dina.
Maybe she'll earn that spot, but not yet. I think this episode they really wanted to, like, emphasize Ellie is alone.
Sure. Well, we're going to start with our hot takes, and then we're going to get into a discussion of the episode, sort of more thematically based. If you have emails, and thank you for the ones who did send in emails this last week, TLOU@thelorehounds.com. We always love to hear from you, and this is a show that engenders a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of feelings and thoughts, and we're anything if we're not like sensitive and thoughtful community. And so we do definitely want to hear what you have to say about this series, because this thing is hitting hard. The Discord is also another great place for us to have conversation.
It's popping.
It is. And that and the Andor one, man, there mm-hmm. were people writing novels in there. It was deep. It's really good. If you like what we're doing and you want to support us and support our co-hosts, you can subscribe either as a monthly or a annual membership. And there are links for all of that in the link tree.
Yeah, we got a lot going on right now. We're doing Andor, as you said, this show, Doctor Who, finishing up Wheel of Time. I just have to edit the wrap up and we're all set with that season. So,
that'll be a relief.
Yeah.
It did get some good, I was looking at the numbers a little bit. It was a solid season for you guys this year on that.
You know, it's funny because, you know, our numbers are higher on some shows, but I think we have a higher percentage of the Wheel of Time fan base because it's just a smaller fan base.
Right,
I think we've infiltrated Twitter of Time, Blue Sky of Time, whatever it is.
Right. That's great. Good to hear.
Yeah.
Right. We'll have more news about the affiliated network at the end of the podcast. I think the last little thing is, John, you've played the games. I have not. I've only watched season one. So you had to keep a secret for a very, very, very long time.
And it's
you did
over
an excellent
now.
Job.
Thank you. I really did try to not like be like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like I tried to not be like cutesy about it.
Yeah.
And now you've been as hurt as I was.
Goodness.
I love people are bringing back their 2020 when the game came out, their 2020 playthroughs mm-hmm. and their reactions on like the streamers are bringing out the recordings of their reactions to Joel's death in the game. They're like, wait, what? it shocked you in the game just as much as perhaps more because there's no spoilers out there. Man, it's such a move. But we're not here to talk about Joel's death, at least not directly. We're here to talk about episode 3, The Path, which is a big Ellie episode. So you want to give your hot takes?
Yeah. And this might come as a little bit of surprise, not only to you, but to the listeners. I've really been thinking about it a lot, and I've come to a decision.
Okay.
And I don't know, this. I apologize in advance if this is a shocking thing or not, but I really do feel that corn is the way to go. I agree with Scott that it's a great cover crop. It has a high utility value to it, and it's quick growing. And yeah, I just think it's the right way.
He's got some good arguments. I love, though, that like everyone's like, look, cool,
bro,
but time and place.
It's an open meeting, man, according to the bylaws.
I mean, shucks. It's an open meeting.
My other hot take was that Bella Ramsey is just she's a mediocre. They are a mediocre actor.
I see you laughing.
Yes, I see you laughing.
Bella's doing a great job.
Oh, man. She's dropping the hammer on this. Well, I didn't mean to use hammer in the wolf episode here with the weird cultists, but
yeah. They do have a name, but I'm not going to reveal it just yet.
Right. I noticed that you had said setup episode, and not to be controversial or anything like that, but just I think setup is almost, it kind of diminishes the importance of this episode. Something that I was really thinking about. It is a setup, absolutely, functionally. Mm-hmm. It is a setup episode. Like, we've closed a major chapter. We've almost, that could have been a
season finale. Yeah.
Right. And so now we've got this show that has to recalibrate itself. And I think that the show did something which was very important, which is we needed to accept Joel's death and we need to reorient to the world as it is now in the show. It's not Pedro Pascal or Bella Ramsey anymore. It's Bella Ramsey and I don't know Dina's
Isabella actor. Merced.
Thank you, Isabella Merced and some others. But if we didn't take a beat and let that sort of breathe and let that sort of grieving process occur, we all knew we were going to Seattle. But we did need to have those opening scenes with Tommy and Joel's body. And we need to lay some new track and groundwork for the fandom to move forward with the where the show is going. I've heard some, you know, I'm sure this was true in the video game world as well. The story is redirecting, right? So it's not, oh, Lone Wolf of the Cub, and we're just going to go in a couple of seasons of this, and oh, and then they have this big conflict and they resolve. There's a fundamental shift to this. And there are people who are like, oh, I don't want that. I wanted this. I ordered vanilla, and now you're giving me vanilla chocolate swirl, right? But from a storytelling standpoint, I am 100%, take me on the journey that, you know, I've given you my trust and my attention, and you want to tell me a story, tell me a story. And this is what's happening. It's not feed me entertainment, feed me the same thing every week, you know, variations on the theme, but actually take me on a journey so that I am coming to a new place with new understanding, new experiences, new thoughts. There is a ton of big theme stuff going on in the show. Nature versus nurture, grief, vengeance, retribution, justice, that whole sort of mishmash, apologies versus forgiveness, all of that stuff. There are some heavy duty things. And I think it would be a lesser show if it just sort of was on the flywheel of delivering the same thing over and over again. This is something. We're going in a new direction with the story, because that's what happens in life, right? Mm-hmm. That's real in a way. So you know, yes, it is a setup episode, but I think the episode is much more. I was wondering, too, if we're going to see any flashbacks with Joel, and I kind of hope we don't. I kind of hope we're done. I mean, I love Pedro Pascal, right? And I just kind of feel like, I mean, his fingerprints are all over the show, right? It's the central source of tension between Ellie and Abby. We still have the mystery, you know, as Gail is you know, still like, hey, what is that? Like, what? There's something weird here, and I kind of want to know what it is.
I mean, so, you got 5 years mm-hmm. missing in the right. story. So I'm just going to say, you know, I don't know what they're going to do in the show. I think that you got to do some kind of exposition on what happened in those 5 years at mm-hmm. some point. Mm-hmm. Especially because we start off in such a hostile point with Joel and Ellie.
Right, right. So we'll see. You know, if we didn't get any flashbacks with Pedro Pascal, I'd be fine. If we get some, I'm just trusting that they're going to use them because it's a cheap way to, you know, keep a star power in the thing. It could be used as inexpertly. I guess that's what I'm saying.
We do know that Pedro Pascal finished filming earlier than everybody else. So they're definitely not going to like use him heavily.
Right, right, right. So we'll see. I thought the background music was really nice. It was palpable. It was present, but not overbearing. It set the right tone. There, just as a personal nitpick, there's a lot of ADR. That's automatic dialogue replacement. So mm-hmm. when they capture the audio at the time of filming, if there's like a saw going or the microphone wasn't working, they have a system to insert. I'm explaining for everybody just because I don't want to sound like a
film. I'm just agreeing. I'm going here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of bad ADR and it really bothered me. My last two thoughts. One, I posted something on Blue Sky today of just Joel's watch. I was like really interested visually. I thought that was a really nice thing and I wanted to share that. And I was searching for the right hashtag. I wasn't sure if it was TLOU or The Last of Us. Bro, there are some disturbing images of people doing stuff with the characters of this. So do not be careful if you're out there on the internet. There are weird people doing weird stuff with these characters. It's bad.
Stay away from the skeets.
It is bad. and my last comment is Dina is right. Guns and waistbands is dumb movie stuff. You shoot your ass off and the gun falls out and holster your weapon properly with a safety strap, please.
Do you know who Isabella Merced played in the past?
I do not.
People were cracking up at her pulling out the map. She was Dora the Explorer in the Dora movie.
Oh, in the movie.
And so they're like, Dora's got her map back. That's awesome. She's got her backpack.
So that's a giant wink. And my daughter used to watch a lot of Dora and then Diego. And I completely missed that. I had no clue. But now that I'm thinking about it,
I think that's really funny. I don't know if that was intentional, but it's
they had to. They had to know. Yeah, they knew. She's great. I love her. I really vibe with her.
Great charisma. Great stage presence. She really does take over the screen when she's acting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love their chemistry. I love to see what they're cooking.
Yeah, they're cooking something. They're cooking something with that little, like your joke later. Can you want to pull it up to now what you named their little journey?
Oh, Brokeback Snoqualmie. Because there's so two funny. Brokeback scenes in this. We also have a little bit of the pit in the hospital scene.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When Bella's grieving Joel and she's smelling his shirt, it's like that's spoilers for Brokeback Mountain. That's like the most powerful part of that movie. But yeah, then they're in a tent in the woods. So,
yeah, I mean, for me, I did say it was a setup episode. I didn't mean it derogatorily. Like,
no, I didn't think so.
Setup episode.
Yeah,
to get to the other. Yeah, like there is no climax without a setup episode, right? Mm-hmm. Like we are moving pieces right now. That we just did a lot of moving pieces in this episode, and I saw actually some complaints in the Discord, like, how are we jetpacking all the way over to Seattle with no trouble? Mm-hmm. And for me, here's what I have to say. This is a story, and we've already done the there and back again thing with Joel and Ellie.
Right.
Do you really want another season of them getting to Seattle, or do you mm-hmm. want to see the story in Seattle? Mm-hmm. And the game does the same thing. You're just in Seattle. Mm. Maybe a couple of like cutscenes, but you're just in Seattle. I think that's the right decision for the story.
I agree. And yeah, we can talk about it now or later. And I don't want to take too far off take too much of the wind out of your hot take sails. Here's just my little headcanon. I was looking at the map today. I was like, okay, the Snake River Pass or Snoqualmie. Like I was really working out because I'm from Seattle. Like I know mm-hmm. Snoqualmie. I know Snoqualmie Pass. I know these things. And between Seattle and Jackson, except for Boise or Spokane, there's really no major population centers, A, and B, it is some rugged terrain. So in terms of raiders, in terms of infected, it is a less hospitable environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm fine with the fact that they were setting out in the summertime, right? Mm-hmm. So 3 months, New Year's, January, February, March. You know, it's still going to be March. Got to be a little bit later because March is still going to be kind of rough crossing the passes. But anyway, I'm fine with it given the geography. So, sorry, I didn't mean to take your...
No,
your
you're good. I think that's right. That's all good context. And plus, you got Dina planning the trip. Like, we're going to avoid major cities. We're mm-hmm. going to, you know, she did put a lot of thought into this. Mm-hmm. She wasn't Ellie just shoving guns in a bag and running.
What's your plan?
I think that's absolutely in Ellie's character. And and she needs Dina to pick up the pieces here.
100%. They're not.
Ellie would have been dead in like a month at the most. And so I did buy that it was an easier journey. Plus, they've been practicing killing infected every day for 5 years. Like, I don't think that it's as much of a threat for them now.
Mm-hmm.
I think they know how to survive out there.
Right.
So I believe that. And like Joel and Ellie, like, it's a series of unfortunate events in the first game, right? Mm-hmm. In the first season. And like, again, I just don't want to see that story again.
Right.
We are telling a new story here. It's clearly centering around Seattle. Let's get there and get going.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. 100% agreed.
But yeah, I think they did a great job. They made interesting changes, and I can't even talk about all of them because I think they're going to reverse on some changes. Like, they're going to bring in certain plot points a little later.
Okay.
But, you know, they did redeem Seth more than they did in the game. In the game, people call him Bigot Sandwich because that's what Ellie says. She says, "Oh, thanks for the bigot sandwich," or something like that. and you know, he at least did his best to make things right.
Mm-hmm.
She still doesn't have to forgive him. We can talk about that later. She still doesn't have to. She chose to.
And I do want to be careful around that because I think we did trigger, or trigger's the wrong word. There was some activation around that. And I think part of it too is because I reacted to your reaction and then we were like reacting off of each other.
I think we just had a difference of opinion. And,
right. And I felt emotional about it. Mm-hmm. And it surprised. It sort of took me by surprise. And I didn't realize that those... my reaction to your reaction. So I think that might have played into some of that as well.
Let's talk about that in the feedback because I think we got some feedback on it.
Yeah.
In fact, that's most of the feedback we got. we didn't actually get as much as I thought. Like, we did have a conversation in the Discord, but I'm not as nice as Nancy, so I don't include Discord as much when we're doing these, especially right now when we're doing like four shows. I just can't put everything in.
Right.
Sorry,
right,
everyone. Write an email if you want to be included.
Yeah.
TLOU@thelawrence.com. I just can't go into the Discord and like track who's saying interesting things.
Mm.
But I think that's a nuanced conversation that we can have later in the episode. But as far as, you know, the hot takes, I just think they really nailed all the emotional beats.
Mm-hmm.
They really got everything that you needed to get with this.
Agreed.
And they grew out Bella Ramsey's hair, which I think is good because that's closer to I think she actually had short hair by the time of that. Anyway, the point is they changed the look materially to be like, this is a new Ellie. Mm-hmm. And I think that was good.
Right, right. Made Ellie look a little bit more mature.
Yeah.
And just to be too on this, I guess Bella Ramsey prefers they, them, but is not also not as specific.
I think it's like either or.
Yeah, yeah. I looked it up today, and I guess more recently they've been saying they prefer that they them a little bit more, but they're not also adamant necessarily about it. So if it slips a little, and again we talk about the character versus the actor.
Yeah, I will use she her pronouns with Ellie because that's right, exactly. The character's gender. Anyway, point is, good episode, necessary setup, right?
Yeah.
This is if it were all climax, it would be very boring.
It would be very boring.
All right, should we take a quick break and then get into the full episode?
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
We're back. So let's start off with grieving Joel. As Jackson reels from the infected attack, Tommy takes over the morgue to prepare Joel for burial. He tells Joel to give Sarah his love. Ellie wakes up screaming in the town hospital and is sedated for treatment.
This, I felt good. It's funny how we describe feeling good about bad things, but I felt that this was appropriate. I felt that the whole sort of setup, I'm just trying to think about like what would happen. Like I'm trying to remember what happened with Ellie, because she was riding on the horse. She wasn't that bad, but I guess at some point they needed to sedate her, and then she woke up out of that.
I think it was much more psychological injuries than it was. Yeah, but she was beat up by them.
She probably
had to the ground and like kicked around.
Yeah, she probably had a broken rib or something like that, because they had a chest tube in her draining fluid from her chest cavity. So there was probably some internal bleeding or injuries there. But that, regardless of what you think about the scream and what, you know, would somebody do, whatever, just the intensity of acting that she is displaying, and later we'll talk about it with the time skip. But she's really, I feel she's found the character. She's found who Ellie is, and she is acting the hell out of this part.
Yeah.
And this scream really felt, it was just very visceral. It was very real to me.
Yeah, I didn't love the scream, but I don't think that's her fault. I think I just would have not put a scream there. Okay. And that's the writing and directing. That's not her. But I think she sold it for what it was. It was a little over the top, the fact that she like wakes up screaming.
I
was just like, that doesn't feel right. But I get it. I mean, she lost the one person that she really trusted in the world.
Right. And I thought the way that they opened it with the flaming, you know, mushroom barbecue out front was quite evocative.
Tasty.
I really liked I don't know. Do bloaters taste good? I loved the watch, you know, really zeroing in on that. And
I was thinking about you when they zeroed in. I was like, David's gonna love this, because he loves the watch.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a totem, right? It's this symbol. It's branding. I don't know if we're going to ever see the watch again. Because she didn't take it, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, she took the pistol.
Yeah.
And I think that was really intentional. That was like, I don't want to remember you. I want to avenge you.
And that's another one of his symbols, is that gun. So I thought that was really great. And then I really loved having Tommy come in. I thought that was emotionally appropriate as well. Given that one of the big motivations was for them to get to Tommy, to go find Tommy.
Yeah.
Right. It was a big driver for Joel and the whole story. And it really sets up Tommy. They set up Tommy quite well in this episode. He's gone from being the kid brother to being, you know, town council, blah, blah, blah. And I think it sets up a good, mechanically, it sets up so that when Tommy pushes back on Ellie, saying, "He's my brother. I know him pretty well. You know, so step off, my friend." I thought that, you know, by putting Tommy in there with Joel, then we really reframe that and solidify the relationship between brothers. So then later, we have that emotional context fresh when Ellie is challenging him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and all right, let's talk about the challenging later, but sure. I did really enjoy watching Tommy just like slowly ritually wash Joel, right? It just felt like I am cleansing my brother after all he's done too.
Right.
Cuz I do think that Tommy knows that Joel did some fucked up stuff.
Yeah, absolutely he does.
You know,
he talks to Gail about it later.
Yeah. He was not like, you know, he did some great stuff, but he also did some really bad stuff.
Like, right.
And that's not even counting what he did in Salt Lake.
Right.
And to be clear, I've been seeing some chatter of like, well, you know, nobody's questioning why the wolves killed Joel, and like, you know, maybe they won't come back. And like, I don't think anyone in Jackson right now knows why Joel was killed.
Correct.
Because Tina was unconscious when it was explained.
Right. Yep.
So we just don't know. Well, we know, but you know what I mean? And I will tell you something. We didn't find out till like halfway through the game why Abby killed Joel.
Oh, right. So you don't even find out
the first half of the game, like with no redeeming quality for Abby. Just like, oh my God, she killed our fake dad. And I think that they did it this way so that, honestly, I think it was so that the actor didn't get the backlash that the game actor got. Because the game actor was like wildly harassed. And it was really bad. And you know, kudos to Pedro Pascal posting a selfie with
with
the actor, Caitlin Dever, right? That's her name. I think that was a really good move by him. That was really classy.
Because we've seen some unfortunate situations. I mean, obviously with Ahmaud Best,
Jake Lloyd.
Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
So I would hate
even Joffrey. What's his name?
Anyway. I can't think of his name.
It's Jack something. Anyway, he got harassment just for playing an evil guy. Like, stop harassing people just for playing characters you don't like.
They're actors. <Come on.
laughs> It's so stupid.
Yeah, it really is nuts. Well, that's cool. Yeah, because we don't want this fine young actor to be harassed for playing Abby.
Do you think though it would have been better storytelling to leave that secret on the table?
No. I think this is good storytelling because I need the for the tension to ramp. I need to know what the points of views of these two characters are so that I can kind of project where they're going to cross. Like I know they're going to cross, right? I know their trajectories are going to cross. When, how, and where is what is going to be the delighting and the surprising and the, oh my God-ing, you know, thing.
Right.
But if I didn't know that, the shock value, it wouldn't work. I don't think it would work.
Okay.
This works better for me.
Fair enough. Why don't we skip some time? 3 months Sounds later. Good. Ellie's injuries have healed, but she's barred from leaving the hospital until she talks to Gail, who she eventually placates with textbook right answers. Ellie returns to Joel's house, going through his belongings and taking his revolver until Dina arrives to bring cookies and intel. The WLF, or Wolves, are the Washington Liberation Front from Seattle, and Dina knows their names, or most of them at least. Ellie wants to go after Abby.
Something that you said earlier, which I'm sort of in agreement with, is not only did we time skip, but we place skipped. And it wasn't, I don't know if it would be fair to call it jetpacking, because they showed us the scenes, right? They showed us several cut scenes saying they're moving across the landscape.
Yeah.
But what I like about the whole thing and the whole setup aspect of this show, this episode, is that these are appropriate time jumps. These are appropriate times to heal. These are appropriate times for seasons to change. And there's stuff going on that we don't really need to know. We're zeroing in on the important moments.
Yeah.
And we're zeroing in on the point on the story beats that are really explaining to us the point of view of the authors of this story.
That's right. They actually added the time skip in the show. And part of that is that there was no destruction of Jackson in the game.
Right.
And so Ellie was just, and she wasn't that injured. So they just like, she was like, I just got to go.
Yeah.
You know, I can't wait.
The other mechanic I really like with the 3 month time skip and the hospital thing was with Dina, because now we have this great character beat between them where Dina's like, I'm going to piss you off. So here's some cookies. and then I'm going to show up and be your best friend and ride or die, right? We are literally going to ride or die on this one. And that without that 3 months and without that little honesty bit, I didn't tell anybody else. I was telling you first. I was saving it so that you could heal, da da da. I felt that mechanically also was a very smart decision for the writers to use that time jump indirectly as well. I thought that was very smart.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it's good. Again, like, I know people are like, well, I don't want jetpacking, but like, do you really want to see them just camp for 3 months?
Right.
I just don't think that you really, you know, this is why we're viewers and they're making the show, because they can tell us you don't want this.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, I bet you didn't think you wanted Joel to die, but I guarantee you're going to have a good story out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the point of a storyteller, is not to give you what you want, but what you need.
The only thing that I'm sad about, potentially reframing our focus away to Seattle, is that I'm not going to get to see Stephen Chang flex his big guns when Tommy can't pound in that steak. We got Jesse over there, you know, step aside, old man. But the future is Jesse, right?
Who knows if we're going to see him again, or Tommy, or any of these people.
Yeah.
I mean, I know.
Yeah, of course you do.
Do you know?
No, I do not. And I do not want to know. I want to be surprised and delighted. And so that's why I'm really trying to be careful about going on the internet with anything on the show.
Just stay away from Google.
Even looking up Stephen Chang's name today, I almost got spoiled.
Don't do it.
Yeah. So, but I had to know who owned those arms, because those are some nice biceps. I love Gail.
Sorry.
What?
That was a ridiculous statement.
I'm fawning. What do you want?
Keep going. Keep going.
Gail.
She's great character.
She's a national treasure.
I mean, look, Catherine O'Hara is a national treasure of the real world. And so, of course, her character is going to be great. Again, show edition, not in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think great edition. I really loved, oh my God, I loved Ellie being like, I'm fine. Well, the speed at which you said that suggests that you're not. And she goes, let me consider a minute. Like, it was so good. Ellie is too smart for her own good, you know? Yeah. And this is something that you see with people who are intelligent in therapy, is that they learn to give the right answers and they don't get treatment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's, and the therapist, look, The therapist usually sees right through it, but there's really nothing you could do about that.
Right.
And maybe there is, and you just need a
better therapist. you're smart like Gail, and you play, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a little sort of cat and mousey game, and you develop your little tricks and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I know
it's later, but I didn't really bring it in. I don't think I even wrote in later, so we could talk about their little baseball scene later.
Sure.
I love the way that she goes, I'm supposed to have a therapist so that I can unload. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, what do? I drink a lot and I smoke as much as I can.
That is the definition of no F's left to give. I'm the only psychotherapist in this place. I got to do what I got to do.
I wouldn't suggest doing this in real life.
No.
But, you know, in the zombie apocalypse, I think whatever substances you want to take are fair game.
Your partner, husband, whatever, was brutally murdered by Joel. Murdered, whatever. Whatever the appropriate
put down.
Word is.
I think put it's probably the right phrase. Yeah,
that's rough.
Mercy killed.
Yeah, and you got a lot of. You're processing a lot of trauma for the town, so it's all good. And I just love. I do love the smart playing with psychotherapy, with therapy in general. It's, you know, we made fun of in TV, made fun of the sort of 12-step groups and circle, you know, small group, conversation stuff. And now we're making fun of talking with your therapist. It sort of is a indicator that therapy is now at a level where everybody can kind of partake in the joke. Right, it's a bit of an indicator, and so I thought they played with it smart and played Ellie's sassiness quite nicely.
Yeah.
With it,
she's sassier in the show than she is in the game.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit, but still, I think she's a little bit more grounded in the game, and they're really amping up her aggression in the show.
Right.
Yeah.
We already talked about this a little bit, but the mystery of what Joel did. Is Gail's onto it.
Mm-hmm.
She knows something's up.
He saved me a lot of times. And she's like, yeah, but you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Does she? That's a question.
No, I'm saying.
No, I'm asking the question. Yeah, that's what. Does she know? That's what I'm asking.
Oh, no, I'm saying that's what Gail is assuming. It's like, you must know.
Right.
What
and I'm asking you, does Ellie know?
Right. Oh, I don't know. I can't tell you. But Gail thinks Ellie knows. That's my point.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I know. I got that. Yeah, because now I'm not convinced. I'm not sure what to think if Ellie knows or not knows.
If she does know, then she's shoving it aside and saying, I need revenge anyway. Mm-hmm. If she doesn't know, then Abby has quite the truth bomb to drop on her.
Mm-hmm. Which would be a great scene, right? Mm-hmm. When these two meet each other finally. Or when the truth is revealed, you know, because the truth will out. So, but the thing is the whole process is going to embroil these two communities, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it already has, and it will continue to do so because the truth is not out, right? It's hidden. And if there was some truth known about it, you know, maybe people could react a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Maybe Jackson would have a different opinion.
Yeah. But instead, they're just like, what if somebody comes back to hunt somebody here again?
Yeah. Which is, I understand that threat, to that the concern of that as well.
Mm-hmm. I honestly think that their assumption is probably just either it was somebody who Joel wronged as a raider, because mm-hmm. Tommy knows that, or that it was they came across them and they tried to rob them, mm-hmm. right? You know, just in scouting.
Right, right. But that's pretty intense. Yeah, and how much does the rest of the community know? How much do all the council members know? I don't know. That's interesting.
Right.
So,
right. I think they all know that Joel had like a checkered past.
Yeah, for sure. I did love when Ellie was leaving the hospital. If you watch that scene over again, her face is light shadow, light shadow, light, and then she ends in all shadow when they cut the scene. Mm. And all the while, the emotions that are playing out on her face are really good, right? There's the, hey, I'm free, I'm out. And now it's like, oh, what did Gail tell me? And oh, I got to go out and deal with the real world. And now that Joel's not in that world anymore. It was again, some stellar acting by Bella Ramsey.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I mean, look, the back and forth between Dina and Joel too, when she comes in, fantastic. I love that. Dina can be really, you use the word narcissist later in your notes.
Quotes, big quotes around it.
I think I disagree with that. I think she's very bubbly and she can be kind of self-centered, but I wouldn't venture her into narcissism because a narcissist wouldn't have waited to tell Ellie.
You're reading my notes out of context.
That's fine.
I put big quotes around there because I wasn't sure if narcissist was too strong of a word or if it was just self-centered. But I was thinking about it more. Dina really likes being Dina.
Yeah.
She loves who she is and she's playing in the world and playing with people and playing with people's emotions a little bit because she knows what she's doing to Ellie. There's no doubt in my mind.
And I don't think a narcissist would have put themselves in harm's way to help Ellie.
I'm not saying she's not a narcissist, but I'm saying there's a self-reflective quality that she really, like, she looks herself in the mirror and she's like, damn, I look good.
Maybe we're just not used to seeing confident characters, especially mm-hmm. female characters in media.
Right.
Like, I honestly, what problematic thing has she done? Like, name one thing that was, like, really selfish, because I can't think of one.
She kissed Ellie.
Is that selfish, though?
I mean, she wanted to, but Ellie wanted to also. Right, but she says, I'm not gay. You are. So if you are knowingly playing with Ellie's emotions around that, then you got to be careful, you know? If you want to play, I'm really into you. I'm not sure that I want to have a, you know, get married and settle down and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if we could fool around a little bit, you know, if consenting adults, et cetera, fine. But when she said I wasn't that high, that's that teasy thing where like, I'm not sure.
David, the closet is glass.
The closet is glass. I've never heard that.
You've never heard that? Mm-mm. This is, you know, she says I'm not gay. I think the closet is glass. I mean, the way she kisses her, the way she's like, I wasn't that high, the way she's bringing it up again.
Right, but she's clearly with Jesse as well. So she's, I don't, but she's quite, anyway, we're getting into, I don't want to go into, I am a cishet male. Like, I'm not going to argue this. This is,
it's a little trickier in the show because again, there was no real big time gap in the, in the game. So they were still broken up by the time she left in the game. So they've changed it so that she's back together with Jesse by the time.
Right.
Or at least she has been back together with Jesse at a point since New Year's.
Well, if somebody has a point of view on Dina's orientation, please write in and let us know. Because
see, I can't say too much because I might know things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. I'm just saying, if I base it purely on the kiss and the aftermath, the closet is glass. Mm. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Anyway, she's playing with her emotions, I think. Because either you're into her and you're like, hey, let's go to the next step, or you're not, right?
And I think, but also, wouldn't it play the same way if she was like, I have considered myself straight my whole life, but now I'm considering maybe I love a woman or I'm attracted to a woman? Like that might also come out the same way, like dipping your toe in.
Sure, it's fair. But the way she drinks out of Jesse's, glass at the dance, and the way there's just a lot about Dita that is showboaty and playful and, But I don't, if I just look at Ellie's position, she's like, does she like me or does she not? She just told me that she's not into women, but then she told me in a final goodnight comment that I wasn't that high, indicating that, there was more to it than it wasn't. Because when they say, when she says, you were drunk, I was drunk, you were high, it didn't mean anything. And Dina's like, yeah, of course it didn't mean anything. I'm just curious how good it was.
But could that have also been a defensive, like, oh, she said it doesn't mean anything. So she now said I have to be like.
Yeah, I read that face value. She was pretty straight about
that. All right. Again, I can't really go too deep into this.
Sure.
But I think they're playing, and look, they could do whatever they want on the show, but I think they're playing Dina as into Ellie.
I agree with that.
She went with her. Partially because it's one of her best friends and she wanted to help her and didn't want her to be alone and she knows that she's going to be a fucking moron and put guns in her pants.
Right.
But but also I think it was partially like, I want to be closer to Ellie.
Yeah.
And this is a several month camping trip with Ellie.
100%. 100%. And she's the one who initiated the kiss. And she's Dina's playing into it, but she's just not being like, hey, I'm into you. Let's go. she's playing hard to get. She's teasing, playing a little hard to get. She's like on and off again.
Yeah.
And I think that's all just Dina, right? That's just all who she is in general.
Okay. So,
yeah. And I am absolutely not denying the fact that Dina is into Ellie. I think she is absolutely 100% into Ellie. Mm-hmm. But is she playing straight with it? Is she playing straight with, is she being honest with herself? Is she being honest with Ellie? I don't know.
I don't know. I just got to stop now. Well, let's move on to the next topic.
Ooh, this show, man. Like, seriously, y'all, this show has like got layers.
I'm not leaving because I'm like upset about anything. I'm leaving because if I go further, I'll talk about spoilers.
That. Yeah. I totally get that. Because even confirming the denying of something is a clue, right?
what's that Always Sunny quote? I'm playing both sides. That way I always come out on top.
There you go.
So that's why I with stuff like this, I try to argue both ways so that it's like, who knows?
Yeah. I did like the cookie thing, though, because I thought it was not only the peace offering, but it was also a communion. She ate the cookie and Ellie ate the cookie and then Dina ate the cookie. And it was like they're sharing an agreement, right?
Much better than Christ crackers.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it is. I mean, if you look at the face at Bella Ramsey, she was like, those cookies are good.
It's like solid apology.
Yeah.
I accept your currency.
Did you notice that Dina has a watch that is not dissimilar to Joel's?
I didn't notice. But that's a cool detail.
She has a round faced watch with numbers on it with a sort of utilitarian band. And it's not the same watch, but it is very visually similar.
Okay.
So.
Well, she's Ellie's companion now, so she better bring some Joel with her.
That's right. And funny setup to WLF, small enough for us to handle.
Yeah, I know. I know. I heard that. I was like, are they going to like reveal that by the end of the episode, or is this going to be something that I have to just go home about? But no, they, by the end of the episode, they show you that they have like an infantry, basically.
Yeah, yeah. You're clear. You're clear that this is a well-armed group of people.
Yeah, you are very clear by the end of the episode that this is not going to be the easy task that they hoped it would be.
Right.
Well, let's talk about the Jacksonians.
Sure.
Ellie and Dina go to Tommy with the intel, which he's pissed that she withheld it from him, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he insists on running it by the town council. Ellie tries to lobby Tommy and Jesse, and Jesse encourages her to write down her thoughts so she's not so pissed off. At the meeting, the town is hesitant to send 16 of their warriors on a revenge mission. Seth stands up and shames the crowd before Ellie makes a speech about justice versus revenge. The vote fails to pass 8-3.
So before the council meeting, and I mentioned this before, I really liked Tommy's pushback on to Ellie about grief. And it made me think that grief is not a possession. Grief yeah. isn't a thing to be compared. I love him too, you know. I loved him too, you know. And you could just say, I loved him. You don't have to say too, you know, as in like you have to defend your position. I just don't think grief is a thing that we should measure or relate to as an object. I have grief and you don't, kind of thing. If I'm close to you and you're grieving, then that's affecting me as well. Like, you know, there's a sharedness to it. And I just really liked the way that Tommy said, hey, you know, he was my brother. I very well understood him. And so, you know, can't use these arguments with me mm-hmm. to, you know, goad me into action or to make me think a certain way. I'm very clear on who Joel was.
And what's really interesting to me is this distinction between Joel and Ellie here.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Ellie says, if it had been you, he'd be halfway to Seattle by mm-hmm. sunrise. And he's like, no, if I were in trouble, he would be halfway to Seattle. But mm-hmm. once people are gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's right. I saw this Reddit post the other day, and I wish I wrote it down or like found the person to credit, but I didn't. So sorry. If you're somehow listening here, write in and I'll credit you. But I saw this Reddit post where somebody said Joel is a protector, and if he was without Ellie, he'd have nobody to protect. He would just mm-hmm. fall back into depression like he was before mm-hmm. Ellie. And I think that's absolutely right. I don't think Joel would seek revenge on based on Ellie dying.
He might be hurt and lash out more, but it would mm-hmm. be in an unfocused way as opposed to a focused, I'm going to kill this person who hurt me.
Right.
Because that's what he was doing. And
the constructometer would have gone way down.
Right. Didn't Frank say that to him?
Or was it Bill? Yeah, sorry. I think it was Bill, and he was like, Bill. Oh, you and me are protectors, right?
Yes, right.
That. Yeah. I think that's absolutely right, though. I do think that this is a fundamental difference. There's, you know, Gail later says like, oh, they're so much alike. But I think this is a fundamental difference between them. Mm. Whereas Ellie is consumed by this hatred and vengeance. And Joel is much more like, I'll protect you while you're alive. But once you're gone, I got to let go.
That is a very astute point. I really like that. I think that's very true. There are some parallel, they're not complete parallel lines, but there's this point of their character that is parallel. But that's the point where they cross. I think yeah. you're right.
And so we don't have to take every character at their word because I think each person knew Joel in a different capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tommy sees this aspect of Joel and really is like, that's why Joel was going to get Tommy in season one, right? Because mm-hmm. Tommy might be in trouble and he might mm-hmm. still be alive. But if he knew Tommy was dead, he would have just stayed right put in Boston.
Right. I can still hear Pedro Pascal, Tommy, you know, yelling out when they get to Jackson.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
Yeah.
Great moment.
That's good. I did like Jesse's wise words.
Yeah.
He's like, but the thing is, people do vote for anger. So,
wait, you know, when?
But she also got a little angry at the end, which is good. She showed some emotion. I think, you know, the pathos, right? You know, people mm-hmm. people are stirred by their emotions.
And actually, Seth's anger is kind of what activated them.
Seth. Oh, boy, Seth.
He's having a bit of a redemption arc.
Yeah, yeah. Which sort of gets into the conversation that we had from last episode. And I
think both things could be true. He could have a redemption arc and she didn't owe him an apology.
I agree. And I'm in agreement with that. So, but we can talk about it when we get to the feedback a little. Yeah. I did think about, though, his point, Seth's point, which is now WLF knows that we are here and accessible in a way. You know, he brought up a point. But then it's this zero-sum game of us and them kind of thing. And then you get into this whole offense versus defense thing. I just actually had a really interesting conversation for the season pass for Andor with Matt Cavanaugh, who's a retired lieutenant colonel who used to teach military strategy. And we were talking about this with, you know, small groups and hyper-factionalism and this idea that if you want something and you have the means, you know, talking about strategy and this idea in this world that here are these two communities. If they were geographically closer, would they have fought already? You know, the only reason they don't know about each other and haven't interacted is because of this, you know, two big mountain ranges, basically 1.5 round mountain ranges. It depends on how you count them.
I do think Jackson is less of a conquering community and more of a welcoming community. You know,
absolutely. Like they've gone
they're
out.
They're not going to pick a fight.
No. We saw at the beginning of this episode of them bringing in refugees.
Right.
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 Where last season they were more standoffish and trying to be just on their own. This time, now I think they're stable and feeling more like, okay, we can bring people in.
And I think that's just a resources thing. Like they just didn't have the resources to bring in more people at the time. And they didn't have defenses. So like if they were raiders trying to get in, they get in and you're screwed.
And your best defense is an offense then, is having active strong patrols out patrolling your borders and marking your territory.
Whereas now you have actually like a town. You have you have patrols, you have all this infrastructure. And so you don't have to be quite as cautious. You can be cautious, but there's people on the ramparts looking down with guns, right?
Right, right. And the regular patrols and everything. I thought about this too. You know, Seattle is the WF. They're a community, no matter what we think of them, whether we share their values or disagree with their values. But then is it right to send people from Jackson on this murder mission, you know, or this mission to avenge Joel's death? So I don't disagree with the council's decision there. So... I don't know that it's a good idea to send 16 people to go murder some other people. Is that justice? I don't know.
Maureen D raised an interesting point. That's like, why 16 or nothing to go to Seattle? Why not 8?
Right. Like,
I think, all right, I'm going to defend the show here, but I could see it your way, Maureen. I think. Maybe they say like 16 is the minimum we could do where we feel like we could take these people.
Right. 4, 8, 12. Yeah. So, I mean, if you think of two squads of 8, so now you have, and then you have medics in both. So that's effectively 7 fighting people plus a leader on each. So that's 2. So that's 5. So you get sort of fire teams of 5. It makes sense to me that you would do 8 and 8. And then that way they're supporting each other and they're integrated. I'm sure somebody thought about that.
I also think it's completely predictable. Like Tommy and Maria could both have predicted that Ellie would just go off on her own.
Whoa, 100%.
Right? I don't know why anyone thought that. Like all they were really voting on was whether to give Ellie backup or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that the town knew that. And that's a little shameful that they didn't send her anybody.
Or they could have just said, we're not going to send 16 people, but we'll give you a horse and provisions and, you know, we'll help you plan it or something like that. Yeah. Like, don't sneak off in the middle of the night. Don't have to steal supplies. And I think the town could have said, do you want to go? Okay. You're a free citizen of this town.
Right.
You're owed a certain amount of something. Here, we'll give you what you need. We're not necessarily sanctioning you, but if you choose to leave, we're not going to make you leave with nothing in your pockets.
Right. I mean, at the same time, like, should Ellie be forced to not draw on the resources of the community that's already struggling if it's just for a vengeance quest for herself. That's I could see both sides here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very good point. That's a very good point. Do you think Jesse voted no?
Yes. Absolutely. I think
absolutely voted no. He hung his head a little
plan.
Bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I Jesse voted no.
Yeah. 100%.
I think Tommy might have even voted no.
Yeah. Well, she got three. We didn't get any other indication.
There's a bunch of people we don't know on that council. So
yeah.
I could see a number of people voting yes. And
we only know three knowing. Of the council. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's take another break and then we'll come back and go to Seattle. We're on the West Coast, baby.
The best coast.
Well, that's incorrect.
I'm from Seattle. I actually born in Seattle. So, and I'm a happy New Englander transplant.
Yeah, now you're on the best. Now that you're on the real best coast.
I'm in the East Coast. Yes, I enjoy it here.
Although West Coast has the best rap. I'll die on that hill.
I was just recently in San Diego, and I was at a business conference, and staying at the hotel at the marina by the airport. Man, it was a bubble. It was like, oh, it's sunny and people are out and people are beautiful and there are boats in the marina. It was such a bizarre going from New England at the end of winter to sunny San Diego.
Wow. I don't want your sun. I want my cranky winter.
And it was like hopping. There were like multiple conferences happening all simultaneously and there are people buzzing around.
Go enjoy your earthquakes.
It was wild.
Go enjoy your earthquakes, you crazy West Coasters. Yeah, I'll be over here with my winter.
Yeah, I will take the winter over no earthquakes, tornadoes, fires,
yeah,
all that stuff. I'm good.
Honestly, like I thought about moving to California for a while.
Mm.
And like it was like a realistic thing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I am too afraid of the wildfires. Like honestly, like you know what really sold me is when I was considering this was right when they were doing they had that like black smoke in the air in San Francisco, mm-hmm, where you like mm-hmm. couldn't even run the AC or open the window.
Right.
And I was just like, well, I can't do that.
Madness.
I love San Francisco. I just don't want to do that.
Right.
All right. So Seattle, a group of cultists following the teachings of a prophet seek safety in Seattle. On their way, they are attacked by the wolves. Later, Manny scouts a safe path for the wolf army.
A prophet isn't magic. They're just people that see truths hidden from others and share the truth, no matter what the cost.
So new faction.
Kind of two new factions.
Like we know a little bit about the wolves from Abby and whatnot, mm-hmm. but these are a new faction. They do have a name. They did not give us the name. They have a couple names that you can call them.
Okay.
But I don't want to spoil it. I have seen their names in recaps, so I don't know really how much they're hiding it. And it's just a name, but I'll let people figure it out by themselves.
I did listen to another recap today. I listened to the Midnight Boys, and they mentioned the name, but I don't remember it. But they didn't give any details about it, and I didn't try to think about the name at all. So, and I've already forgotten it.
It's nothing crazy. It's nothing like really spoilery.
Yeah.
Anyway, right. So let's just call them the cultists for now. Is my point.
Fair enough. Yeah, and they are culty with those big cuts on their faces.
Yeah, they've got those scars.
Yeah.
And they
even
are
the kids.
Yeah, they're giving hammers to the kids. Mm-hmm. And it looks pretty dark, doesn't it? But yet they're like, "Oh, we are peaceful and we're just, you know."
So when I read your outline and you have this line here which I highlighted, they're attacked by wolves and I highlighted it before I did my second watch this afternoon. And then when I was doing the second watch, the guy does say, you know, the mm-hmm. girl says demons and the guy says wolves.
Yeah.
And then I was like, damn, but they have a code. They didn't kill Dina. You know, is this really wolves or I got all like conspiracy and making it more complex than it was.
Let's not. Just linger on that long.
Don't let wolves. Me go hunting around in the closets in the shadows.
What's the name of the guy that you focused on?
Markley.
Yeah, this is not a Markley. Those were the wolves. Those were the WLF.
Right. And they had means to defend themselves. They had bows and arrows and hammers. I don't know. You know, they supposedly, because I got thrown off. Yeah, but
the wolves have weapons, right? Like, they are clearly militarized.
No, the cultists.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because Abby says we have a code. We don't kill people who don't have the ability.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So I was like, why did they just slaughter these people and leave them on the roadway? That just seems very, but then it's like, oh, okay, well, it's a sign to others, stay away, blah, blah, blah. So.
Yeah. Waffo on that one.
Yeah, 100%. And the bodies are not that old when Dina and it's
yeah, they're recent. Aligning the timeline by the
end. Yeah. So that's pretty close. And I don't understand it's the Seattle situation. So I will say this really quick. I felt visually like I was in Seattle, like when we were on the street with the wolf people, I was like, oh, I kind of recognize that street, you know, and some of the views, the Manny is up in the Space Needle that is actually on this, you know, I could see the railing, you know, up all that kind of there. So that kudos for that. Cause it felt very, very good. But, where did they get the gas?
go with that one.
You're
going to need to. Yeah.
And I get where they got the military hardware. That's a Striker. That's what that APC is called. And, there's a big joint base just south of Seattle, just south of Tacoma. So, you know, no problem getting the materials. But then I'm like, why are they moving to a forward operating base? A forward operating base is like a satellite base that you extend out from your main base. So what is it there? Why are they moving to a forward operating base? Why is he clearing sectors visually from him up there? What else is going on? I mean, is there really that many infected in Seattle still?
Yeah, it's a city, you know? Sure. So like you're always going to have infected in the cities.
Yeah.
That's just like a thing. I think you're just going to have to accept that as kind of a rule of the show.
Okay. All right.
Fair enough. Cities you're going to have infected. They did film all this in British Columbia.
Well, yeah, of course they did.
Which makes sense, you know, similar climate. Vancouver especially. I've never been to Seattle, but pictures I've seen have looked like this. I know in the game they put like real businesses that are still there.
Oh, funny.
So that like it would like really feel like it was Seattle.
Nice. Well, I can tell you the one very accurate thing is everything is green and mossy and moldy, so they got that right.
It's wet.
It's wet.
And I do think that's interesting because the first game didn't really have that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And now we are going into this. And this is, a main location in this game, in this season.
Right. Well, I will agree with Perry Como, though, that the bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle. So,
ooh,
it's a very good song. If you don't know that one, but
I don't know
it. It's a famous song. Yeah. And it's true, because when the blue skies come out in Seattle, you're like, oh, shit, it's blue sky. Yeah.
Well, that's lovely. Nice. Do you see it often, though?
enough so that you're like, oh, it's blue sky. Well,
yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
So we see Manny.
Yes. He's being a little bit grumpy up there, clearing sectors. Rah, rah, rah. I don't know. It's not going to be a nice climb up to the Space Needle. I forget how many feet up in the air that thing is, but it's a significant, it's a bit of an elevator ride. So if you got to climb that manually, that is a pain in the ass. I will tell you.
Good military training.
Yeah. He's definitely
good militia training. Yeah.
He's going to have some good upper body strength.
Yep. And I don't really have anything else to say about this. Nope. I think this is a lot of waffo.
Yeah.
So why don't we go to the final set of scenes, the escape. Dina finds Ellie packing guns for a rogue mission. She takes charge, pulling out a map of the route to Seattle.
And
I'm the map. I'm the map.
You should have pulled a clip.
I know. And leaving to get supplies from their helper, Seth. The duo heads to the gate where Seth gives them two horses with supplies and shakes Ellie's hand. On the way out, they visit Joel's grave and Ellie leaves coffee beans. They arrive in Seattle to find the dead cultists.
What is up with the coffee beans? Is that because Joel liked coffee?
They did references in season one, but it was referenced a lot more times in the game, just how much he missed coffee.
Okay.
And when he could get coffee, he was like, oh, this is the best.
Got it.
There's like a line that's like, he would have sold half his possessions for a cup of coffee.
Okay.
Like he, and so she brought some coffee beans from, you know,
got
from,
it
from Jackson. She put them there because
I now remember that scene when they're after they've left Bill and Frank's, where he's making coffee in the percolator thing, and she's like, "Oh, disgusting," or whatever.
So. Right, and he's like, "This is the shit. Like you don't even know, kid."
Right, right.
I honestly miss coffee. I stopped drinking coffee in November.
Oh wow!
And I miss it a lot, but it's made my blood pressure a lot better. So
yeah,
I
stopped. For sure. I stopped for a number of years. I did like a meditation course that was like a week long, and I had stopped for the longest time after that. This is a long time ago, long before I met my wife and before the birth of my child. And then my child was born. And I started drinking coffee again.
I drank a lot of coffee in the first couple of years. But yeah. I stopped partially because I, you know, my blood pressure, but like I'm still drinking green tea mm-hmm. just in moderation, and it's a lot less caffeine too.
Right.
But yeah.
We're getting way off track here.
This is what the people come for.
Well, this should be a second breakfast topic, actually.
We did a coffee.
Did we? Oh yeah, we did. Way back when.
We can do it again. I don't care.
Yeah, we can recycle that. I do a 50-50 half-calf blend. I get beans from the same roaster, a decaf one and a regular one, same roast, and I mix them together so that I can have 3 to 4 cups in the morning. Whereas if I drank 2, I'd be like, So mm-hmm. because I like the ritual. I enjoy the ritual of drinking my coffee in the morning.
I miss it. I miss it. But now I have a tea, so it's fine. So we've got...
No, you got to do the... Ted Lasso. His reaction to tea.
I have green tea. I still don't really love black tea.
Okay.
Like English.
Well, yeah, just tea. Like Ted Lasso does.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it's fine, but it's not great. I used to make a London Fog. When I worked at Starbucks, I used to make a London Fog a lot. Mm. Which, you know, Earl Grey tea, a little bit of milk, steamed milk, and like a little bit of honey.
Mm, nice.
Delish. Yep. Delish.
Well, anyway, back to Seth and friends.
So your friend Seth is back.
Yes.
Your best buddy from last week.
That's right. That's right.
That got us all into trouble.
Indeed it did. Are we talking a little bit about that now or?
I think we can kind of elide into feedback here.
Okay. Because we kind of talked already about Ellie and Dina on the trail.
Yeah, we did.
And so I think that's all done. And again, just to be sure, I'm not calling Dina a narcissist, but just the fact that she's in there. So I just want to don't at me about that one.
I'm going to say she's just confident, and she is confident in herself. She's comfortable in her own skin. But at the same time, I think she's having feelings mm-hmm. that maybe she didn't expect.
Sure. Fair enough.
You know,
fair enough.
And maybe this is one of the first times she's felt like, ooh, who am I?
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I accept that. I accept that line of questioning. So, Seth,
what'd you think of this before we go into feedback?
Well, they showed him in the town council meeting, and I absolutely knew that he was going to then, you know, be something. And it makes sense now, the whole, you know, build up for it. And I want to go back to that whole apology thing. I agree that she's not obligated to forgive him, you know, to accept his apology. And there was a comment from somebody in a feedback, I think, something about the fact that she wasn't prepared. They ambushed her with that. So yeah, I totally agree that that was, she was not a willing participant in that conversation. So that was unfair for Ellie to be thrust into that situation.
Yeah, it was quite an ambush, right?
It was completely.
In public. It was, I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen until you get there, whereas Seth had time to prepare. I think that was an incredibly unfair situation.
Totally agree with that. And I think the point that I was ultimately trying to get is when people make those kinds of mistakes, how do we create space for them to move away from that when they have realized? And maybe he was forced into making the apology, but then during that sort of quote-unquote forcing period, he realized, oh yeah, that was a really shitty thing for me to say, and I actually do feel bad and remorseful about it. Where's the space for that person then to move forward, demonstrating, not just in word, but in deed, to be somebody, you know, to change who the community knows them to be? And it's interesting that the showrunners and the writers decided to continue this storyline and this element and actually have Seth be a supporter of Ellie's point of view to the point that he materially helps them against the rules of the community.
Yeah, I mean, my philosophy has been, yes, we can leave people room to grow, mm-hmm. but we are not obligated to remain in relationships with them of any kind.
Sure.
You know,
agreed.
If Ellie wants to just like not talk to Seth anymore because she was very hurt by what he did and she's protecting herself, it's totally up to Ellie.
Right.
And he's not owed a forgiveness. He can take the fact that he didn't get forgiveness and say, I'm not going to do something like that again so that I won't need forgiveness again. And that's how he grows. He's not owed absolution for what he did, especially the day after. So, David, we did get feedback on these,
yeah.
and again, this is not a team sport here.
No. But
there's a sort of a spectrum of people who are more pro and against compulsory forgiveness.
Acceptance, right? Of forgiveness, yes.
Yeah.
Something.
And so I just want to say, you know, I don't want to read them in full because I don't want to ascribe us to the opinions of various mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. because I feel like it has been kind of portrayed as a team sport, even though it's not. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I just think that we've kind of hashed this out quite a bit already.
Right, yeah.
So Sarah B. wrote in and just said, you know, back then and now, you know, before and after the world ends, Ellie doesn't have to forgive and he's wrong, you know, in whatever world. Mm-hmm. Seth is wrong in whatever world. Andrew V, you know, was laughing that, you know, we called it when we said we're going to get a lot of feedback on this one, which we actually didn't in email, which I'm actually pretty surprised about. Mm. But, you know, I think we got more Andor feedback than we did Last of Us. Mm. But anyway, he calls my opinion the millennial one. I think he's saying, like, refusing a genuine apology is sort of like the victim gaining dominion over the mm-hmm. person who made the offense. And I just gotta say, I totally disagree with that. Mm. But like, I don't understand. You're not gaining power over somebody by refusing forgiveness. You're just not giving them a gift. If you, mm-hmm. if I say, I don't want anything to do with you and I walk away, mm-hmm. I don't have control over you. Mm-hmm. Any control I have over you is in your own head. Mm-hmm. You know, that's on you to be whatever person you want to be over there. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about this. And that's my philosophy in this. Mm.
Fair enough.
I don't know. You have any other thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I just want to make sure that, that everybody out there listening is okay as well. You know, it was a conversation that strayed into something that I didn't realize was going to, you know, yeah. people were going to have as strong of opinions. I mean, it's one thing, haha, Joel's a monster, right? It's and we do two feedbacks podcasts about it. And that was, you know,
the trial of Joel Miller. Yeah,
right. Yeah, it was more fun and sort of lighthearted. And this one, you know, and I don't know if the world just right now feels very crunchy in a lot of ways too. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world. I'm just feeling that even just in my daily life and with, you know, stuff with family, school things. So I just want to make sure that everyone's okay and they know that when we have these kinds of conversations about these kinds of topics, we're trying to come to them very honestly and authentically and actually have some conversations sometimes yeah. around nuance is not easy necessarily in this because you and I can have a conversation. We have an understanding and an agreement, yeah. but everybody else is sort of listening in on this. And it's the, you know, that weird positive
parasocial.
And
like you and I, we had that conversation and we were just like laughing about stuff later. And I didn't take anything like
right
adversarial away from it in the end. Right. I was just like, okay, that was an interesting conversation we had where we didn't quite agree.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know,
and
also like, I think whatever opinion you have on it, I think everyone can learn from deeper conversations like that.
Exactly. And that's, I think, part of what the Lorehounds is founded on is this idea that we're thinking and feeling and that we're sharing and examining these kinds of things. I mean, you and I have gone through a lot and now it's you, me, and Alicia. And we, you know,
yeah.
we didn't plan to be in business together with each other.
I know.
and move podcast hosts and do all this kind of stuff. So we have a shared history of trust between us.
Yeah.
Knowing that we can do these things. And so, I get that the show just maybe, you know, the show is tripping on so many levels of, you know, of all these big themes and stuff like that. So anyway, I just want to make sure that people feel okay. And if there is something to say, we read all your emails and we process them. And whether they get on air or not, with some
if
of
they're
the
mean,
stuff.
We're not going to include them. But if, right. but you know, if they and also like we don't include stuff that's just like I really liked this. Usually, mm-hmm. you know, like
yeah,
just because you know, I think we try to include feedback that's like conversation starters, right? Yeah. That are
substantive.
Yeah, that are like theory crafting or like an interesting take on a scene or something like that. And I think that's what we try to do here.
And I was looking over at the Andor for the episode 3 thread. There are some deep conversations going on, really nuanced stuff that is very, that could be.
Nancy spoiled them. Nancy has spoiled the listeners and now they don't want to send emails anymore.
Right. They're all in the Discord. Like, there are some really fascinating conversations and I have to give it to the community. Everyone is being respectful. Everyone is acknowledging and being gracious and giving each other space and asking good follow-up questions and making good secondary points. And that level of healthy discourse in an online forum in this day and age is extraordinary to me. So I really just want to say thank you to the community for everybody, you know, just being able to have this kind of conversation where it might get a little uncomfortable or like, oh, wow, I really don't agree with that. But
yeah, there was some really great stuff that was really nuanced and like tough subjects, especially mm-hmm. like you were saying in the Andor thread. And I was really impressed by the community. So thank you. Thank you all. And thank you to our mods for keeping everything nice and clean.
Yep, for sure. All
Joe
right.
Joe H. is our last piece of feedback.
Oh, right. Yeah, that one, he got it in just in Cincinnati, yep. Joe.
I didn't even copy it into the outline. We're going to right from Gmail. All right. We liked this episode. It had some good character interactions and looked great. However, some things this season don't make as much sense as I'd like. And I'm thinking that's because it's an adaptation. When playing a game, you don't have time to question plot details. And you're focused on different things than when watching a show, especially a prestige one. The council scene was good, though no one seemed to discuss why this WLF squad only tortured and killed Joel.
That's a really good point. Joe, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
I was glad the council voted against Ellie's, quote, justice plan. there's no reason to think this group is going to be coming back to Jackson. They were clear with Dina that they didn't want to hurt or kill anyone else. Sending an armed posse to Seattle and attacking WLF is much more likely to cause future issues than just leaving this alone. In fact, I'm surprised no one spoke up during the meeting to say that they definitely shouldn't go after Abby and crew because successfully killing her could lead to worse problems down the road.
Mm.
Ellie setting out alone on a suicide mission is not surprising given what we know of her character. Dina 100%. Wanting Ellie to have supplies, etc., makes sense. But Dina going happily along like this is a weekend excursion rather than a dangerous cross-state killing trip that will likely get them both killed felt odd. The WLF squad was six going after one guy. This is two going up against six or likely more. And they apparently made it all the way to Seattle without any trouble, which makes it which seems strange given how dangerous we've seen this world is. Cincinnati Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Longtime friend and supporter of the pod.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point about the why the council wasn't having attorneys general or they call it in the U.S. government the people who police their own agencies.
Inspector general.
Yeah, the inspectors general. That's I was thinking I was getting confused with attorneys generals, but yeah, why didn't they have an IG report? Like, wait a minute, why is Dina alive and why was she knocked out?
Yeah,
and they only killed Joel.
And Ellie
if they
alive.
Were Raiders, and
yeah.
You know, they would have killed, you would have assumed they would have just taken them and gone, right?
It's a good question. I didn't consider that. So thank you for bringing that up, Joe. Yeah. I will say I disagree with you on the Dina thing. I think she's clearly into Ellie and wants some alone time with her. and I do agree that she loved Joel. And they set that up better in the show.
Yeah.
They reference it in the game, but you never really see them interact in the game.
Mm.
And they do it better in the show with that.
Absolutely. So she's learning from him. She wants to, she goes out on patrol with him, Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she really finds that parental figure, that male parental figure important to her.
Yeah. So I think that it does make sense for Dina to go. It's certainly risky, but Dina, I think it's perfectly in her character.
I think she's
the explorer needs to be out on the trail.
That's right. I think she was impressed by Ellie's speech as well.
Yeah.
You know? So
I loved Gail saying like, "Oh, she's lying." Like that, it's not about
we didn't
justice.
Even talk about that. Yeah, yeah. Total liar.
Not about justice.
We didn't even get into the whole nature versus nurture of it, but hey, we'll maybe another topic for another.
But and I also enjoyed like Tommy's like, "Well, there's a difference between lying and being a liar." He's like, "Yeah, I know. She's a liar." I said what I said.
40 years of therapy in the post-apocalyptic world.
She leaves no
world.
Crumbs.
She ate, is what the kids would say.
That's right. That's right. Are you saying that at school pickup to make your daughter cringe?
Yeah. I haven't been recently, but...
my daughter's too young to make cringe. She still thinks I'm cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's more for fun. We're still in the fun, like dad. You know, we're not into the roll your eyes silently and walk away. I'm a couple years from that yet. So
yeah, get your Hot Topic gift cards now.
Yes. Right. Well, let's get out of here.
All right. Go check out The Affiliates. Never Mind the Music, covering music and psychology every week. Great stuff going on over there. Radioactive Ramblings doing some Studio Ghibli stuff. I don't know if they're doing some book stuff soon. I think that would be fun if they, right? Mm. They were doing Red Rising. I always see Radioactive Richard talking about the Stormlight Archive, which I'm reading right now. So maybe they'll give me some companion podcast to go along.
Oh,
with
that'd be fun. That'd be cool.
That'd be nice. We've got Properly Howard coming back with a new season soon. We've got Rings and Rituals going to be back for more Ring Power at some point, and we've got Wolf Shift Dust doing Dune soon. I'm told.
Dune is always coming.
And Dune is always coming.
I am going to be on the Dune Minute podcast.
With Alicia, right?
She's doing her own episode. I'm doing my own episode.
Okay, you're doing it separately. I didn't know
that. Yeah, because you know they do 5 podcasts a week of about 15, 20 minutes each long. And they cover exactly 1 minute. Absolutely only one, but they stop. If the scene stops in the middle of a dialogue or whatever, that's where they end their conversation about the podcast. It's incredible. Anyway, but when they have a guest on, you're sort of there for a 5-minute chunk. So you're sort of there, a guest host on for the week.
Okay.
It's all recorded in one day and then they chop it up.
All right.
And publish it out. And I'm going to be covering, I believe Alicia's doing something having to do with Alia and Paul's mother, Lady Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing the naming ceremony when Paul Muad'Dib, also known as Usul, gets his name.
That'd be great.
So that'll be fun.
That will be fun. And I didn't mention Alicia's other podcast, Star Wars Kind of Timeline podcast, which I know she's been plugging lately because they want They want some Andor lore. People are asking for more about the Rakatan invaders.
Yes, like I was calling them the Rakatan invaders. It was the Rakatan invaders. I was like, I know I've got the syllable.
I mean, she dropped a lot of knowledge on me in that podcast.
I listened to that podcast. Yeah.
Great research. At least she's always a great researcher, but
yeah.
I think she outdid herself on this one. So if you are a subscriber, that's live on your feed now. Or if you're a season pass holder for Andor, that's on your feed too.
Right. And then I just did a video analysis of the TIE Avenger. I don't know if you got a chance to watch that.
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
Had a busy day today.
And I had that side conversation with Matt Cavanaugh, who was the retired Army. And we were talking about, we started off with a Monty Python quote from Life of Brian.
Right, right. People's I had Judean to delete front. It from the soundboard just now.
And so we talk about, and again, those are season pass or subscriber exclusives. We talk about hyperfactionalism in rebellious movements. And he pointed out that the Maya Pei Brigade, he was like, oh yeah, no, that was totally familiar to me. Like that's a bunch of young, you know, hyper young soldiers who don't have any leadership around them. That seemed pretty accurate to me. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. That's very true. So
it's Lord of the Flies all of a sudden.
Yep, absolutely. And I think we have not seen the last of the Maya Pei Brigade.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right.
I think they introduced them for a reason.
Okay. Fair enough. I think we're going to have to get the whole gang together by the end, just like the Lorehounds have, squadron style.
Yeah, and squadron style it is tomorrow night. Happy Andor Eve.
I know. Happy Andor Eve. So check that out. Doctor Who, can I just say, if you're a science fiction fan, this season of Doctor Who has been a blast. Like, we weren't going to cover it in full, but it's been really, really good. Cool. Like, they just did, I'm not going to tell you which one because that's a spoiler, they just did a sequel to like a 20-year-old episode.
Oh, nice. Very good.
And you don't know that it's a sequel to that episode until like halfway through.
I saw you guys chatting with Ian on the production server, and it seemed like you guys are having a lot of fun with it. So
we are, and we're doing shorter podcasts. You know, it's not as
much doing the light fast ones. Yeah,
but it is so much fun this season. I think they're really getting into it. And the most recent episode is one of the horror episodes, which I think is where Doctor Who shines a lot of the time.
Okay.
Anyway, right. I just want to plug it because it's a great show, and it's at risk of cancellation. And I hope that we don't get that because it's been on since 1963. Other than the gap, and I would like it to continue.
Very cool. Sonic Screwcast.
That's right. All right.
Should I give some shout-outs?
Go give the shout-outs. Yeah, that's what I was going to next.
To our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doof71, Athena Agilea, Tina, Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard, they all pay a subscription to Discord, and then you get a couple of bonus. They're Nitro bits. They're Nitros. What are they? I don't know.
Boosts. They are Nitro. They are server boosts.
Boosts. I think the other thing I was calling them is from Twitch. Your bits.
Yeah, maybe.
But anyway, they boost our server. You can donate and support other servers, and so they do that for the Lorehounds community server. So thank you, because it makes the server a more functional space and makes it a better place for the community to congregate. Our virtual water cooler, if you will. There's a link in the link tree if you want to check it out, too, if you haven't been there before.
It's free to join the Discord. I just want to make that clear.
Everybody.
Like, these are just people doing a nice thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no obligation to boost. But thank you for those who do. To our lore masters, they are our top-tier subscribers, the people that help us hold it all together. Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., Brian P., SC, Peter OH, Adam S., Nancy M., Doove71, Brian 8063, who's also known as Usul, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Matthew M., Sarah M., Andra B., Kwong Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Lestu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Ilmaril, and /Tim, forever last but never least, Adrian. Thank you all so very much. Whether you're a subscriber or not, whether you're a lore master or a lore founder or a lore hound or whatever, thank you for being here. Thank you for participating in the life of this community. I really appreciate it.
See y'all later.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.